doing this DSMR style. Ooh, I did get kind of a little tingle there.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 595. My name is Lisa Sheps, and I am joined by my wonderful, dedicated, and extremely smart co-host, Ms. Nicole Shiro.
Why, Lisa? Keep going.
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. During the pandemic, we are pre-recorded.
The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world.
Is Wednesday, December 16th, 2020. On the show today, we have our friends at Tilt with a Tilted Christmas Carol. And then later on, we'll be speaking to Alex Garza and his show, Abuelita's Christmas Carol. All that with news of theater in a computer, and a computer. We'll be back after this song.
And thank you, Matt, 'cause now
Nicole, I'm stupid with love over you.
I'm stupid with love over you. We've had to argue over who loves each other more.
Who loves you, pretty baby? Who's gonna make it through the night? Who loves you?
Did you watch Tina Fey? Broadway?
I did. Well, what do you think? Why do you think we played Stupid with Love for Mean Girls?
Well, that's why I was wondering if that's why you played it. And then you started singing Jersey Boys. So I'm like, she must have watched.
Also on Tina the same Fey. Thing.
Yes, I didn't realize they were coming back to the stage.
Well, they're going to New World stages. It seems to, this is another subject, but we've talked about this before. This is New World stages has been a great thing for shows that have run their course on Broadway and find a new home off Broadway after Broadway, which is I think a wonderful thing, and hopefully it will continue on. Jersey Boys, New World stages coming back.
I enjoyed all the Jersey Boys. I looked at my brother and said, I forgot how much I really enjoyed this music, and I enjoyed the Jersey Boys, and I don't like the jukebox musicals normally.
I don't either, and I believe that I one of those rare times that you and I agree. I totally love Jersey Boys. I think it's a great jukebox musical. The staging and everything that happens with it is just full of excitement and wonderfulness. So what did you think of the NBC One Night on Broadway?
I really enjoyed it. I watched a lot of people's comments that were so angry, like, where are all the new musicals? And I'm like, did anyone miss that this is a tribute to the best of? I have to tell you right now, want to know what my favorite thing was the entire evening? Was Antonio Banderas doing A Chorus Line. I love Antonio Banderas so much, and I love A Chorus Line. I just think it's
really, and of course, this is the Spanish language Chorus Line,
yes,
that he hopes to bring to Broadway, which would be great.
Yes,
I'm all in favor.
And it's Vanessa Williams was talking a bit about his company when we were on that interview. Mm-hmm. That what he has done in Spain with this company, and then to bring a fully Spanish language show to the stage. I mean, I'm so sorry COVID knocked him down, but I don't think it's going to stop him, and he's going to...
No. So I am of mixed emotions about the entirety of the NBC special. There were things I liked and things I didn't like, but I have to say that I may have gone to your camp with Jagged Little Pill. This may have just turned me over to your side.
I've never liked Alanis Morissette. I don't like Jagged Little Pill. I enjoyed watching these performances.
Well, I like Jagged Little Pill and Alanis Morissette as an album. I'm not quite sure I like what I have seen in general about the Broadway show. Although, and I'm interested in what the narrative is I think maybe if I saw it live, I might change my mind. So there was actually lots of TV stuff that I want to talk about, and I guess that's what we'll spend the first half of this show on. Did you happen to see The Grinch with Matthew Morrison?
I couldn't. His makeup and everything just freaked me out, and I couldn't do it. And I love The Grinch. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah, I guess I don't love the Grinch as much as you.
Do you watch it?
I watched as much as I could, which is about 10 minutes.
Oh, you got further than I probably would have. I mean, I watched one number and I couldn't.
But well, it's interesting. The Washington Post did a review of it, and the headline is Matthew Morrison's Unsettling Grinch is a Natural Conclusion to 2020.
That was exactly the headline I read, Casey, and I said, well, I believe they summed up exactly how I felt, and I couldn't even watch it.
Yeah, it was, but it was interesting. So as I was watching it, I thought it was, I didn't realize it was basically a taped thing on stage, and it was,
they taped it in London, I think.
At the, mm-hmm. I have the theater name here, but it, at first I was watching, I was going, is this done live? It looks like it's being done live, but it's not. It's done a la live, on the stage. So I have to give them a little kudos for that. But it just wasn't very good. So some of the quotes from this particular columnist, her name is Sonia Rao, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that, from the Washington Post. The very first sentence, which is one, the very first paragraph, which is one sentence long, it says, "Reader, I tried." That's the first paragraph.
That sounds like you wrote this.
But then she says, you've got a show that ceaselessly reminds you of your misguided decision to sit on the couch.
Mm.
And then, finally, this paragraph. The Grinch is essentially a furry Mr. Shoe taking out his pent-up anger on innocent townspeople. And as with Mr. Shoe, you at least have to hand it to Morrison for his clear commitment to the performance. But that doesn't make it any less haunting.
Have to give it to Morrison for his clear commitment. I don't think that's actually good.
But they actually gave, and I don't have the, I can't remember his name. She actually said good things about the guy that played the dog. Because he opened the show.
Yeah, I was like, he's actually a large part. I will say, like, the costumes and visually, like in Whoville and stuff, that was really cool. But I mean, if you really want to go to Whoville right now, up until tomorrow, through Broadway Cares, Equity Fights Ace, is Leslie Margarita's One Woman Who's Holiday, which is Cindy Lou Who, grown up in a trailer park, drinking and cursing. So it's an adult version, and this is not for the kiddos. But if you want to take a different turn on Whoville, that's available through tomorrow evening.
And probably worth watching. So
yeah,
I'm
that's on my
have
list
you seen
today.
It?
I couldn't get it in on Friday and Saturday because I was at Curbside Cabaret on Friday. And then I was rocking at Christmas on Saturday. So, I mean, I was
lovely.
Just theater brocolating.
You got your full fill of Roderick Sanford.
Can I just tell you, he brings me joy. If I could put him in my pocket and have Roderick Sanford everywhere, I would. Because
it could be arranged. I have connections.
And he's up there moving and shaking, and you can tell it's just because he's having just as good a time as we are watching him. He is
fully committed. So that's, it's great to watch him on stage. So the last little piece of news I want to talk about is something that I know you haven't seen because you do not have Netflix.
Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
Ma Rainey's Black Bottom is out yet. So there you go. So it is indeed The Prom. And I know we'll have differing views on this, but I watched it.
I love the musical. I'm just angry about some of the casting. I think the musical is phenomenal, and I'm pumped about it being.
Did you see it, the musical?
No, I didn't see it when I was in New York.
So I was a little, I was very pumped and very excited to see it because I hadn't seen the musical and I wanted to. And I think that, in my opinion, it will translate much better to stage than it did to film, casting notwithstanding. We're going to talk about that, I promise you. But I do need to talk about Jo Ellen Pellman, who played Emma, the LGBTQ kid that this sort of centers around. And of course, her girlfriend, Adriana DeBose. This girl, Jo Ellen Pellman, was amazing.
That's where I'm like enamored by. It's her.
Truly amazing. She had it looked like an effortless performance. This was her very first film ever.
I know.
She had one interview or audition with, oh my God, I just lost his name.
Ryan Murphy.
And he gave it to her almost immediately.
She should have. Come on now.
I agree. We're going to talk about that too, but I just loved her. And I couldn't remember the name of the woman who did it on Broadway. And I thought, God, I hope it's the same person, but it was not.
No.
But there's a wonderful article in the New York Times written by Sarah Barr called New Star of the Prom Sees a Chance to Make LGBTQ Characters Visible. And it just features everything about Jo Ellen Pellman, and she identifies as queer. She was brought up by a single mother who's a lesbian, and she did not grow up facing what the character Emma grew up with. It's a generation that is growing up with acceptance instead of rejection, which I think is great.
And that little Adrienne DeBose, isn't she the one who's in West Side Story?
She's in West Side Story, and she was the bullet in Hamilton.
Okay, I was about to say, and isn't she your famous character you just learned about? The bullet.
What? Yeah, she's the bullet. She was the bullet. Yes. She's amazing. And that's another one that when you watch the film of Hamilton, your eye goes to her, and she's in the chorus. She's a future chorus member.
I remember you discovering her, you knew about her, but like really it's seeing it and having it be a part of your watching experience when you were watching.
She's amazing. So now let's go to casting and the prom. And this is, I know where you have a problem. And there is an article in the Los Angeles Times that there will be a link to talking about how films, movie musicals often ignore the
talent on stage,
the talent from the stage in an effort to sell tickets. And it's a well written article, I think, because it doesn't come from a too critical mind, because they kind of understand why studios do it.
I understand why,
but
I just think it went too far in this movie. It did not need to be more than half the cast.
I must say that of the musicals that Dame Meryl Streep has done, from a singing perspective, she kind of shines on this. And if we have time, we're going to play the song It's Not About Me from The Prom, which is really funny because she talks all about lesbians and it's funny. But I think she did a pretty good job.
I had a video of your face saying all this.
The Andrew Rannells and Jim Corden, both Broadway stars.
James Corden.
Well, I call him Jim. That's, because we're on that basis. Both their background is Broadway musicals. Broadway, because James Corden's.
Andrew became famous from Broadway. James did one show, became famous, and had a talk show where people know him from. So his.
But his background,
background is not the same as Andrew. I wouldn't put them in the same.
Oh, I would put them in the same. But I see your point. I'm not denying that. Yeah. But I don't. It doesn't matter to me where people got their fame. He was within theater circles very well known prior to taking on the talk show stuff, I think, based on his Olivier winning performance in, and Tony winning performance in
One Man, Two Governors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I would encourage folks to go watch The Prom. It's on Netflix right now. And see what it is. It's a delightful piece. I mean, it's, I think that, I think it will translate much.
Great story with some fun music.
Well, I think that the villains, and I'm using air quotes, which is the four Broadway people in this, find their hearts too easy.
Oh, really?
And Keegan Michael Keane. Oh, never mind. He was in it, and
that gent did,
and he was pretty good too. So it's worth seeing. So I think we now. Well, let's just jump right into our first interview. We were fortunate enough to talk to Alex Garza, who is doing his one-person show of Abuelita's Christmas Carol at Ground Floor Theater this Saturday night. It's live streamed. And Alex is just, he's such a sweet person. And
he thinks we're nutty.
He does think we're nutty. He doesn't know, he does not know how to handle us.
No, but he's adorable.
Well, let's listen to that interview. Nicole, please put down that Sloppy Joe sandwich. We have to go do an interview.
Okay. It's so good, though.
You not only is it a messy-looking sandwich, but you're a very noisy eater.
It's stinky, too, and it is messy, and it is loud, but it's a really good New Jersey Sloppy Joe.
Oh, no, you're eating a regular Sloppy Joe.
No, this is a good, stinky New Jersey one.
Anyway, let's hop in the Zoom machine and see who we find.
All right. You have to press the buttons, Mike. I'm cleaning off my hands.
No, you can't touch. You can't touch anything. Here we go. Oh, we're right back here at Ground Floor Theater. We must be in the.
Goodness.
Oh wait, no. There's Alex Garza. Hi, Alex.
Hi,
Alex.
Hey, Nicole. Hey, Lisa.
What are you doing at Ground Floor Theater?
Well, I'm getting ready to do my one-man play, Abuelita's Christmas Carol, which is happening next Saturday.
That's right. Abuelita's Christmas Carol. Now, this is a show that's been around for a while, hasn't it, Alex?
I would say it's been about 14 years now, and I can't believe so many years have passed. And I can't even.
Has it really been that long?
It has been that long, and I can't even count how many performances I've done of the show at this point.
I have to ask you: was your first performance at Play Theater Group?
Play Theater, yeah, Play Theater.
That was
Group
the first
here in
one.
Austin.
Yeah,
right, and that was done with a full cast, and then the next year decided to kind of go solo with it and attempt to turn it into one-man play, and it just became a tradition.
All right, so if
really
I
cool.
if I hear Christmas Carol in the title of something, I think I know what it's about. So do I?
I think so. I would say it's a mix of Christmas Carol and It's a Wonderful Life and a little bit of South Texas Mexican-American tradition, and it's all those things rolled into one, and I think it makes for kind of a fun comedy, but also has its serious moments and kind of very touching for family and audiences from all over.
So your Abuelita's Christmas Carol is actually based on your Abuelita. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's based on my maternal grandmother who passed away several years ago. And at the time I wrote the show, 10 years had passed since she had passed away. And I wanted to do something as a tribute to her. And the play just kind of took shape in 2006. And, I cast it and used a lot of characters from my family, my grandmother's life, and things that she had gone through. And it turned into a very sweet play. And I was pleasantly surprised and happy to continue to do the play year after year.
So I've actually never asked you this. Part of the play shows your grandmother as the host of a cooking show. Did she actually host a cooking show?
That's a good question. And sometimes when people ask me what actually happened in the play and what didn't, and what's kind of like a little bit of dramatic license. But I think what I remember most growing up was going to my grandmother's house in Hebronville, Texas. And whenever we got there, she always had lunch ready and she was always cooking and doing that for her. And that's a great memory I have of her. So I kind of translated that into the play as her being a host of her own cooking show. And so it kind of took shape that way. So I wouldn't say she necessarily had her own cooking show, but she definitely spent a lot of time in the kitchen, and that's some of the fondest memories I have when I think about her and what she meant to us.
So do you cook yourself? No, I don't mean, I'm not asking you if you like place yourself in a pot and turn on the heat. I'm just wondering if you yourself cook.
No, I never do that. But as far as cooking myself, I don't think I kind of inherited those genetics from my grandmother and that side of my family. And
are you saying you didn't? Or you did?
I'm not a great cook. The microwave is one of my really good friends. And not that I'm afraid of a stove or an oven. It's just it's not a skill that I really have.
I guess I asked that question because, you know, this show is really about me, not anybody else. And in my family, it seems, well, it didn't skip a generation, but my grandmother did not cook, but my great grandmother did and taught my mother. My mother sat side by side with my great grandmother. So I was thinking maybe it skips a generation. So I was thinking that maybe you and your grandmother were like my mother and her grandmother, but I guess not. Yeah.
And I don't know, I you know, if you asked me, was she the greatest cook in the world? I wouldn't be able to like definitely say that with 100% confidence. What I will say is that I think what she cooked from the heart, and she's a lot of cheese on things like enchiladas, macaroni and cheese. And she cooked, just things that I liked and that were delicious to me, you know?
Well, great. Well, so one of the things,
the meals show love. And the making of everything is so much a part of the process too.
That's true.
Whether it tastes good or not.
Precisely. So, yeah.
Going back to the show itself, Christmas Carol, the one written by what's his name? My
Mr.
favorite,
Mr. Charles Dickens.
Mr.
That guy.
Well, I call him Chuck, but it's so Chuck wrote Christmas Carol. And the main protagonist character is somewhat of a grouchy grouch, but Abuelita is not a grouchy grouch.
No, she's definitely more lighthearted, a lot more fun. But I think the connection to Christmas Carol is just that, is that Abuelita is kind of taking on a journey where she's visited by spirits and people from her past who have, you know, passed on. And she's starting to feel like her life doesn't make a difference. And she's able to kind of see flashes from her life and where her life was, where it is and where it's headed. And it helps her understand that she does have meaning to all the people in her family and the people on her cooking show and people over the world. And that's where it also mixes in with It's a Wonderful Life, that just kind of look at what your life is and what it can be and just feeling that appreciation for who you are and how people see you, you know?
Well, wonderful. So now, of course, this year is slightly different in that we are not doing anything live these days. And so you are doing this as a live stream. How is your preparation different for a live stream version of this show versus something in front of an audience?
That's a great question also. I think, I'm an actor who hasn't necessarily done a lot of film or television or commercials or anything like that. So I haven't done a lot of performing in front of a camera, but in terms of preparing, I've always kind of just prepared the show in the same way, no matter what kind of theater space, small or large, or just the arrangement of the theater space or the stage space. So I've always been able to kind of, in terms of staging, kind of improvise and kind of adapt to whatever space and circumstance I'm in during the performance. So I think that I'm gonna approach it that way and be conscious of where the cameras are, but at the same time, just do my show and kind of adapt as I need to as I go along. And I think I've done this show so many times and I know it so well. I know the characters, the dialogue, the story, that I can adapt pretty well to whatever circumstance I may be performing under. So I don't think it's gonna be the biggest challenge. I just need to be more aware that there's people out there watching me on camera who need to be able to hear me, to be able to understand what I'm saying and to have the story delivered in the same way I would for an audience in front of me in the theater.
Right. But the other thing that you'll be missing is that energy and that immediate reaction that you would typically get with an audience in front of you.
Yeah, definitely that. I think ever since I was a kid, I've always like performed in my room or in front of a mirror. And I've always been able to imagine in my mind, the audience and how they're reacting to what I'm doing. And hopefully that'll kind of come to fruition when I'm actually performing with a live stream. I can kind of imagine in my brain how people are going to respond to a comic line or a dramatic moment. And that kind of helps me radiate the energy that I feel they might be giving back to me if they were like right in front of me.
Well, wonderful. So when will this live stream be?
The live stream will be happening on December 19th here in the Ground Floor Theater at 7:30 p.m. And
wonderful. And do you know how to tell people where to find information?
You can go to groundfloortheater.org /Abuelita.
Yes, you can. And then you can get all the information on Abuelita's Christmas Carol. And I'm so thrilled and looking forward to doing the show at our theater, Ground Floor Theater, and looking forward to seeing the work myself.
Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to sharing it with you all and also all the audience members out there in the virtual streaming world.
Well, great. Alex Garza, thank you so much for joining us again on Offstage and on the Air.
Thank you, Alex. For having me.
Thank you, Nicole. Thank you, Lisa.
Well, I am looking forward to the show. It is done at our theater, in full disclosure. And I do want to just point out that this Abuelita, we're producing it ourselves. It's got a little bit more stepped up production value. And we just saw our scenic designer, Gary Thornsberry, is just doing some amazing work on the set. So it's going to be, I think it's going to be lovely.
Yeah, I'm going to say two things. You seeing the scenic work and the way and what that looks like, the set, I can't wait to see. And second off, after watching you live stream a performance this past week, wow, what a great job. Hats off to you and Ground Floor. I can't wait to see this one too.
Thank you. It was fun and our first time, and we're going to hopefully do many, many more. I would like to tell folks that this show, Abuelita's Christmas Carol, will be ASL interpreted. So there'll be a little box with an ASL person in it. So that's another little thing that we're doing, which we could not do for Curbside Cabaret. I tried everything.
Well, I'm just going to tell you, it's another reason why the Ground Floor is cool. Just saying.
Love you. Well, we have to take a little break.
Just saying.
With that commercial or that compliment, we have to take a break. We'll be right back. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air, live from our living rooms with Lisa
and Nicole
and Sophie and Liza Minnelli. All right, so let's just keep talking about stuff. So here's something that I should have known about. It's been around, I think, since 2004. It's called the Meshuggah Nutcracker.
I sent this to you. I didn't know about it either, Lisa, and I'm so upset. And first of all, the title got me going. And you know I wanted to say Meshuggahna to be like funny as we did as the joke. And I'm like, thought of you. And then I read it and I'm like, this just gets better and better and better as I read the description. Everything about it is everything.
Yeah, and it's been around for a while. And I didn't watch the whole thing. I watched the first little bit. But basically, it is taking the music from The Nutcracker and putting it in a Broadway or a musical style on stage. And it's been done.
Dancing Dreidels. You sold me at the Dancing Dreidels.
Well, the Dancing Candles. So it's a cast of nine, which includes the eight candles of Hanukkah plus the shamas. I'm trying to find out when it started, but the costumes are beautiful. I will say that it's done very over the top.
It's supposed to be crazy.
It does what? It's
supposed to be crazy.
It is crazy, but I think that it's I think it could be done with a little bit more. I don't know how to say this the right way without sound. There was no inner dialogue. This was just like shtick. It was like shtick out there with nothing. And I think it could have been done a little bit less shtickier and had a little bit more heart to it. That's my only criticism of the piece, but the music is fun. The choreography is fun. And I want to try to find out where,
And I know when I sent this to you, am I correct? It was on the Broadway HD, right?
It was on Broadway HD. And it when you go to their website, which is themeshuganutcracker.com, it doesn't tell you where they're from, where it came from, but it's been around for quite a while. There was a cinema presentation. I think it was Fathom Events back in 2019. And it was created by Shannon Guggenheim and Steven Guggenheim and Scott Evan Guggenheim.
Do you think they're related to the Guggenheims?
I don't know. But it's interesting. And I had fun.
And it's squealed with delight. And I was like, is this new?
It's Tchaikovsky klezmer.
Oh my gosh, that's the greatest way to describe that. Tchaikovsky klezmer. And I love klezmer. You know that. Oh,
who doesn't love klezmer?
I still, Mickey Katz, Joel Grey's father, hands down the best klezmer artist. Do you say klezmerists or do you say klezmer artists? What do you say there?
I say klezmerites. I would assume klezmer artists, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But well, Mickey Katz, Joel Grey's father, Jennifer Grey's grandfather, hands down, like the man of klezmer.
So I want to just go back just shortly to the Tina Fey special.
Okay.
Which we've now calling the Tina Fey special. I don't think we deserve to call it the Tina Fey special. It's One Night on Broadway.
Nick Mayo special.
Was Nick involved?
It was Broadway Cares Equity Fights Aid.
Oh, so true. Yes, that's true.
Involved.
It's the Nick Mayo special.
But
Kristen Bell, who I love as a television performer,
that was hilarious.
So when she came on, I said, Kristen Bell Broadway? No, she did Tom Sawyer the musical was her Broadway debut.
You didn't. She was in Reefer Madness.
And she was in Reefer Madness. Yeah. Well, I did not know these things, but I don't remember Tom Sawyer, the musical. So I do need to mention or talk about a death in the theater world and a friend of mine. Michael Hotop passed away. He's a scenic designer. And I worked with Michael on, probably 10 different shows. He was in his 70s, I believe. But his partner, Sammy Viverito, who is someone else that I know pretty well, he was 74. He won Emmys. He was very involved in Jerry Harris, who was one of the producers of Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, have been part of my theatrical life that's scoped from Broadway to my industrial stuff that I did.
Okay. So they've crossed over into all those like...
Yeah. But Michael was a lovely, lovely man. And he and his scenic partner at the time, Paul DePass, did a lot of the shows that I did when I first started out in the business. And he passed away.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that. And then the next day, Charlie Pride passed away. This has been a tough week.
Yeah. And thanks to you, I was able to meet Charlie Pride through the
Ameripolitan
Awards. He's very,
you stage
very
managed the Charlie Pride.
I did indeed. Mm-hmm. So let's.
That's a big loss. There are a lot of big losses this week.
Yeah. Well, let's just take that and turn it around to a lovely interview. We spoke to Adam Roberts and Nicole Cortichato.
Him on Saturday. I just have to let you know, he has such an infectious smile. You know, I'm all about an infectious smile. I just am so down with an infectious smile.
Well, there's a vaccine for that.
I don't want one for an infectious smile. Give me smiles all day long.
All right. Well, let's listen and hear about the Tilted Christmas Carol. Oh my, it is Tilt Performance Group and our old dear friend and former guest co-host, Adam Roberts. Hi, Adam.
Hey, it's good to see you down here under the sea.
Well, exciting.
We're in the
Alan Menken on my left, Howard Ashman on my right.
Very good. That's a reference some people will understand. And we have here with us Nicole Cortichato. Hi, Nicole.
Hello. Nice to be here.
And we're here to talk about the Tilted Christmas Carol.
So excited.
I'm excited. I love when Tilt does stuff. And when I was like, wait, they're doing a Tilted Christmas Carol. This is curiouser and curiouser.
Well, I love this idea, and I'm pretty much a blank slate. I do not know anything about this, but I'm always excited when I go to look at stuff that Tilt is doing, because you always have a fresh take on the way you do things.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. That is something that we do strive for. I think that you know, for those who are unfamiliar with Tilt, we are a theater company and more broadly a performance company that is dedicated to shattering stereotypes about disability. And our company is made up of both the board and the company members of adults with disabilities, as well as adults without disabilities. And so, you know, that intersectionality is important to us. And also creating new work and new takes. And really, interestingly that you say that, Lisa, I was thinking this is, I think... This is our 18th or 19th production now, and it is our first adaptation, I think, that we have taken a public domain story and we have adapted it on our own. I think this is the first time we've done that, so that's been exciting.
Right.
That most is of you, exciting. I can't believe that.
Yeah, most of your stuff has been devised or as whatever that word I'm trying to think of. When you, there's a word, original? It's easy. Well, yeah, original works. That wasn't the word I was trying to come up with, but it's good enough. But, you know, I do want, before we get into the show itself, I would love to talk just a little bit about the company and the members that you serve, because I want our listeners to understand that disabilities aren't, you can't necessarily see every disability.
That's right. Sometimes, you know, the term that gets sort of used a lot is invisible disability. And one of the things that is kind of unique about Tilt as a company within the world of arts and disability is that we are not particularly focused on one area of the disability world. And that's not to say there aren't other companies that are the same as us too, but it's not necessarily the most common that you'll find. So, for example, we have folks who are on the autism spectrum. We have folks who have mobility disabilities. We have folks who fall on the, I'm trying to think of all the different ones because there are so many. We have, we have seizure disorder. We have so many different things. And really something that one of the views that we hold strongly to is that, you know, disability can or cannot, you know, be a large part of one's identity. And so what is even classified as a disability is, you know, is something that is sort of up in the air for us. And we're happy about that. You know, it's part of the individual and part of the individual's identity.
Cool. And I love the work you do. And what I love about the majority of the work you do is the joy that comes out of it. So after I see a Tilt performance, I have an uplifted spirit. And so I'm assuming that this is no different. So tell us about Christmas Carol and how this adaptation will work.
Amazing. Well, I'm happy to be here with one of our board members who is also a company member and an amazing playwright, Nicole. She is just absolutely incredible. And this production would not have happened without her, I must say very honestly and truthfully. I'll talk a little bit and then I'll hand it over to some questions for Nicole. So, you know, like all other theater companies during COVID, we have been pivoting, tilting, if you will. And we were meant to do a production in person in May and one in October. And then we're planning to do a small cabaret around Thanksgiving. And so A Christmas Carol was not originally on our docket, but we then went digital and have since done two digital productions. And since we sort of rearranged our plans, we thought, wouldn't it be great to do a holiday piece? And of course, you know, everyone sort of does A Christmas Carol or The Nutcracker or, you know, the perennial holiday favorites. But we thought that we would be able to give it a really unique twist that is sort of particular to Tilt. And without giving too much of it away, I'll just say that, you know, the Scrooge in our Tilted Christmas Carol is not stingy. In fact, the Scrooge in our Tilted Christmas Carol is the opposite. Our Scrooge loves Christmas, but there is a big obstacle that is standing in her way in this particular adaptation. And it has to do with disability, though, you know, it's not right on the nose. And so I think Nicole could probably talk a little bit about the process and how we came about it.
I would love to hear about the process, Nicole. And also, Nicole, are you the writer that adapted the piece, or was it a team project? And you are muted.
Yes, it was definitely a team project, and I started. Well, this is how it started out. We got together on several occasions and talked about all of the characters and what we thought we wanted to happen, and sort of came up with a little bit of an, I mean, there already was an outline already, obviously, that you're working with. But we just sort of got ideas from everybody, and then kind of people just sort of created their own version of the character that they were going to play. And based on the little details that they gave me, I went with that. And also in knowing each person specifically and kind of their personality and also their disability, worked with those in mind and created characters and the storyline. Of course, I had my own ideas about how I wanted it to be different. But there was a lot of help from Boy, and since she's playing a major role, you know, I wanted her, and also she's from England, so wanted her to chime
she
in.
She is indeed.
With, you know, her take on it, it wouldn't be, you know, Scroogey without it, you know.
So I'm guessing Boy is playing the Scrooge character.
That's correct.
Yeah, can I say?
We can. We could say.
Well, we guessed it anyway.
Boy is a longtime company member of Tilt. She's been with us for quite a while, and she is also now the director of our education programming, Tilt U.
Oh, awesome. Which I know
I
that you
love
we've
that. That's great.
Yep. Yeah. And I know we've talked about that on previous shows, and we're really glad you're doing it.
Yeah.
Nicole, the show is done, I'm assuming, on Zoom, similar to All Access and some of the other shows that you've done recently.
It will be, it was filmed. I think Adam will have to speak more on that, because after I did the writing, it sort of took off with them doing performances.
Isn't that the way it always is? There's just no respect for writers these days. So did you shoot this individually, or is it going to be done live with Zoom? How's it happening?
Yeah, so we did shoot this over Zoom. Mm-hmm. And what we did was we had a few different rehearsals where we rehearsed in order with the script. And then we, when we went to film it, because of people's work schedules and school schedules and other things like that, we ended up filming it out of order. And then Dave Hawks, who has worked with us for a long time, then goes and takes the filming and puts it all into the correct order, and then edits it together with transitions and music and sound effects. Jeff Miller, who is a great friend of Tilt and has worked with us on many productions, he very graciously came up with about 150 sound effects for us because this Christmas carol is contextualized in a 1940s radio station. It doesn't, the story doesn't take place then, but that's the framing. And so I say Jeff is our virtual Foley artist in this case, because he was kind enough to lend his expertise to find those sound effects. And so then all those get layered in over the production. And then that is what gets put out on the day that we premiere. We then leave it available for folks who aren't available to attend the day of the premiere, and they can experience it throughout the next 3 weeks or so. But it's cool to come to the premiere itself because we have a live chat going on. We have kind of an after party that you can get a Zoom link to. So it feels like an event.
Sure. So when is the premiere?
The premiere of A Tilted Christmas Carol will be on Sunday afternoon, December 20th. I know, I had to think about what month it was. Sunday afternoon, December 20th at 3 p.m. Central Standard Time. And then we always do with our virtual productions, and I say always like it's not just our third time doing it, but we are continuing to do a pre-show of about a half an hour that is a virtual playbill. So that is it's a series of slides, kind of like looking through a playbill that you'd have in the theater with bios and with, you know, sponsorship ads and things like that, that is narrated for those with visual impairments. And we present that a half an hour before. So 2:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, that virtual program will start. Mm-hmm. And then 3 p.m. the show.
And you have been the voice of that in the past. Will you be the voice of it this time?
I will be the voice of it this time.
And I would encourage folks to not only go take a look at this show, which is sounds wonderful, but to come in and listen to the visual description, because as someone who is sighted and doesn't need a visual description, it is really interesting to hear a visual description while looking at it.
Well, thank you. We try to make it interesting.
I have a question. How many people are in this production?
Great question. I believe, Nicole, please correct me if I am, other Nicole, please correct me if I'm wrong about this. I think that there are eight or nine actors, but most of the actors play multiple roles.
Ah, okay. This is awesome.
Mm-hmm. So where do folks go to get information about this?
Great question. So there are a few different places. One is at tiltperformance.org. That is our website. You can also visit one of our social channels that is constantly being populated on Facebook at Tilt Performance or on Instagram at Tilt Performance. All of those three are good locations to find more information about the cast, about the process, and about how to experience the production with us.
Well, great. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I'll be watching it the day after Abuelita's Christmas Carol at Ground Floor Theater.
Fantastic.
So it will be a Christmas Carol weekend for me.
It's kind of like the Epcot of Christmas carols this year in a way. Not necessarily geographically, but perspectives, you know?
Exactly.
With a different flavor and flair and view. I totally understand. But you know what? I love that. I love that you can take a story we all know and look at it a different way. I love it.
It's exciting. I totally agree.
Especially a story I like.
There you go. That's right.
Well, wonderful. I hate to put a button on this, but we're about to run out of air in the Zoom machine, so we do have to leave. Have a great show. And Nicole, I can't wait to see your work come to life on the Zoom.
Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure working with everybody. And I'm anxious to see how you adapted yours.
Well, it's all very interesting.
Can you share a quick detail of...
Just very quickly, Abuelita's Christmas Carol by Alex Garza is a show that he's been actually doing quite a while, but it tells a Christmas Carol story from the point of view of his grandmother, his Abuelita, and food.
Hmm. Amazing. And
he does the whole show, one person.
Wow.
One man.
Single
incredible.
Person.
Single person.
Well, great. Well, we'll see you back in the real world.
Okay.
See you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ah, gotta love Tilt. You love them.
I do.
Six is back on stage in the West End.
Yeah, but not really. It's, they're all closing down tomorrow night.
Right. So it was an experiment, which when I heard it happening, I was going, I don't know about this, but West End opened. And so as Nicole just mentioned, shuttered again. But Six has had such a, and I don't know, I kind of don't feel sorry for them because they tried so hard. They, I believe they got closed down on Broadway the day before or the day of their opening night. But then
yes,
they,
the young girl talked about that in the Tina Fey special.
Oh, that's right. And then they went on to say, you know what, we're going to do a drive-in version. And they scheduled this tour, drive-in version, that they were going to be performing in trucks. It's a cast of seven, which is each wife of Henry VIII. And then that tour got cut down. And so then they were going to open on the West End. And then I think that got shut down before they opened. And then they finally opened. But there was an interesting, I saw something on TV and they were interviewing people in the audience, which I have to say, I don't agree with them opening up again, just from a COVID standpoint. But everybody was so excited to get back in the theater. So there was an interesting article, Five Ways Theater is going to Change. And I got to find the article. That. You know, I'm one of these people that is, I'm very resistant to saying that everything will be different from now on. And and when I read that headline, I cringe a little bit because I truly believe that theater is about sitting in the audience. And I say this a lot, shoulder to shoulder with somebody, trading energy with the performers on stage. And I was afraid that this article was going to say that's all gone. But it doesn't say that. It basically says that things are going to change, that Broadway may not be the big epicenter of theater in the United States anymore, that it is going to go out to the regions. The creative class is moving away from the big urban centers and moving out. Of the five things, and I don't know why I can't click this link, so I'm going by memory right now. Of the five things, the one thing that is going to happen, and I agree with this, is that there will be more of a video and online component moving forward.
Yeah,
in the future.
That was one of the big things in the unions joining together one of the big things.
That was the other thing is the unions are going to be more cohesive. And it was very interesting. I guess as 10, 15 years ago, SAG and AFTRA joined because there was a big conglomeration. It was a lot of connection between film and television. So mm-hmm. SAG and AFTRA became SAG-AFTRA. And now during COVID crisis, equity is now we talked about the problems with equity and SAG-AFTRA. So we're probably looking forward to a day when the four A's are indeed one union.
Yeah, that was the other big thing I got from that article that I was like, oh, which I've already seen happening. So that one didn't surprise me as much.
No.
But you know what? Being, I felt connected watching the live performance, as connected as I did being at the theater in the back by myself with people. I felt connected to people on both. They were different feelings of connection, but I felt connected through both live performances, experiencing Friday and Saturday.
Well, okay. Yes. And here's what happened for Friday and Saturday that you saw. So to remind folks, you saw Curbside Cabaret, which was a live stream performance. And then you saw the Zach's,
A Rockin' Christmas
in person. Mm-hmm. Both of those were done live.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a big difference between the energy that's from a live performance versus I'm going to play a recording of something.
Exactly. And it was a different feeling, but I still felt that connection.
I'll give you that.
Yeah, it was interesting because I was wondering if I would, and doing that 2 days in a row in two different ways, I was really surprised at how connected I still felt.
Well, we've come to the end of our broadcast day.
Well, that's a good thing, because I have to go potty.
Okay. You know that's going on the air, right?
I'm so thrilled.
Okay, well, yeah, so I'm speechless. And with that, we're just going to say goodbye, and we'll see you next week when we look at offstage and what's happening offstage and on the air. Listen, you bigoted monster.